This is Pastor Michael's Book Club on Restless. Let's get to it.
All right, guys. Well, strange new world.
It's strange, it's new.
Chapter one. It was interesting getting back into this. It's been a number of years now since I read Truman's
Rise and Triumph,
bigger version of this. But it was interesting how much of this I feel like has just become even more. Well, it's just become, for me, it's just become like how I understand what's going on. It just is like this is how I look at everything. And so much of it is because I was, influenced by his book so much. And you're right, like how much more this has just spiraled out of control culturally.
Yeah. Since he wrote this,
It's just gotten out of control.
Yeah, because when did he write that?
2020?
It was prior to 2020,
was it? I thought it was 2020.
Maybe it came out 2020.
So this one came out 2022, but I'm wondering when like Strange New World, or The Rise of Triumph came out.
Oh, 2020 it says.
Yep, in late 2020.
Oh, okay, 2020. Right. So yeah, it was kind of after my COVID came out.
Well, I mean, who knows? You know, when he was working on the manuscript, it's possible he was working on it right as it was.
Yeah, that's true. I had
the drivers. Crazy time. Welcome to the strange new world. Pretty approachable little chapters here. Nothing crazy. 11 pages, 12 pages.
I was pleasantly surprised, only because I was reading this.
Thank you.
Later last night, I was definitely getting tired while reading.
Been there.
And so I was happy that it didn't go on longer than it did, because I don't know how much more I can go.
Right.
Oh man. Yeah. So he starts off just talking about this strange new world, but to read, this is in the second paragraph. He says, for many people, the Western world in which we now live has a profoundly confusing and often disturbing quality to it. And so he's talking about just how strange and different and weird things have gotten, especially if you know the world that was before.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So even when I think about, I mean, I'm not old. I've grown up in the midst of a lot of this stuff, but like remembering even the way life was, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, things are extreme now, right? Like, they've gotten to an extreme that I don't think I ever would have expected or thought this was the direction we were heading. It's interesting. I know we talk about movies all the time on this podcast, but I just started to show my kids Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Rick Moranis.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to watch because I remember there is kind of this trope in the late 80s through the 90s type movies where, whereas today in a lot of these movies, there's not intact families. Never, except in like The Incredibles.
Other than that,
it's like there's no such thing as an intact family. Yeah. Everything's kind of a mess. Maybe it's stepkids. Maybe it's a single parent household. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
In the late 80s, 90s, the trope seems more so what you see in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, where it's like a still intact family. But usually the father's kind of a bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
He can't get things right. In the end, he pulls it off, but it's still, like, it's unexpected almost, right? And it's, like, sheer luck. And the mom is, like, a career-driven, kind of well-put-together woman. And you see the trajectory of that is obviously, and it's almost always like, they have some problems. Like, they have some issues, and they're trying to work it out. And in the end, they're like, I love you, But they clearly have some very significant issues.
Mm-hmm.
if you just trace that trend, then another generation, all of a sudden it's like, yeah, and those people are not together. That is gone. That is over. And the chances of them staying together or having ever been together for any length of time.
Right. Well, what does that communicate to the kids? Like, what is that? What sort of picture of marriage does that paint for the kids? Of course, what sort of general, you know? Like,
yeah. Right. And so you take that and then you put, okay, here's all these people growing up in the midst of that kind of mess.
Exactly.
And yeah, everybody's going to have problems. Everybody's going to have problems. That's going to be the norm. And so, yeah, it's especially if you're older. Probably the world that we're in now, I can't imagine what it would be like if you were, you know, 70 years old.
Yeah.
Unless you were like deep into the, you know, deep into the 60s countercultural movements.
Yeah. Right.
I think probably you're like, this is all insane.
Yeah.
Like, I literally can't understand
what's going on. Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's almost unprecedented, right, in history, because we have, you know, historical accounts of pagan nations doing all sorts of strange, weird things, and then missionaries coming, and then they come into Christ, and then obviously then they become Christian, like Christian nations and all that stuff. And now we're seeing the first time in history, like really the shift from like Christian to like post-Christian societies, I think.
Well, that's a cool business.
Where it's just like, I think, like you said, like, you know, even like 10 years ago, like a lot of this stuff was just unthinkable. But yeah, like you said, even imagine like maybe 50 years ago, not to say like, oh, we got to get back to the 1950s. Like, I'm not saying that, like, that was the golden era of human history. But yeah, for people that grew up, you know, in like the 50s, you know, before the sexual revolution, really. And then now to see like where the world's gone, it's like, or where our society's gone, it's just like, yeah, unfathomable. It's, again, it is a strange new world.
It's so crazy. Yeah. Just imagine this. So you have, you know, quote unquote, Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's a lot of people that grew up when, you know, this is Bruce Jenner, Olympian, a man. So now, Caitlyn Jenner, fully transgender. Has a, like, you know, transgender, I don't know, I'd probably not spouse, but like, you know, is together with somebody that's transgender, but is a conservative, quote unquote,
yeah,
a conservative influencer of a type, you know, in favor of more conservative things, and is vocally against gay marriage, because, quote, you know, she, quote unquote, is a traditional kind of girl. Wow. But just,
hey, man, what is going on?
Hold on
here?
A second, though. I mean, just like the out of control nature of the world that we're in. And obviously, that's not like maybe everything, but that's not like that's, there's a lot of weird things going on.
Yeah.
And so it's just wild when you, you know, even like we're saying, watch a movie from 30 years ago, 40 years ago, or if you start, you know, reading history, when you read, when people are being exposed for the first time to the Bible, when you've grown up in this, and you're exposed for the first time to a biblical worldview, even for it's so extremely different that, you know, like, it's going to be jarring. It's going to be very shocking.
Yeah.
He paints this picture of this vast distinction between the previous world and the one that we're now in. Immediately after, on page 19, after where you left off, Pastor Michael, things once regarded as obvious and unassailable virtues have, in recent years, been subject to vigorous criticism, and even in some cases have come to be seen by many as more akin to vices. Indeed, it can seem as if things that almost everybody believed as unquestioned orthodoxy the day before yesterday, like the fact that marriage is between a man and a woman, for example, those things are now regarded as heresies advocated by only the dangerous lunatic fringe. He makes that compelling argument. And then at the end of this little subsection on 21, he kind of paints the picture of where the book is going to go and identifying the source of the culprits. So it's, yet it is my conviction that there is something that helps us to unify the changes we are witnessing and to make them, if not entirely explicable, at least less random than we might be tempted to think. This is the notion of the self. And the self connects to three other concepts of relevance in my narrative: expressive individualism, the sexual revolution, and the social imaginary.
Yeah, that's an interesting point he makes. It's not only did the shift go from these things weren't acceptable to they were acceptable, it's they weren't acceptable, they became acceptable, now it's
you're
crazy if you don't accept
exactly.
it. Whereas before it was like unthinkable to be like,
right.
Again, like 10 years ago.
Right.
Who would have been like, yeah, you know, like those people watching in like the 1970s, watching Bruce Jenner in the Olympics. Yeah. Like, who would have ever thought, like, you know, in a totally serious way, he would be dubbed Woman of the Year.
Right.
At, you know, like, wait, what? But now it's like, if you question that, you're the problem.
Right.
You're part of the problem. You're
how dare you? You're insane.
Yeah.
What sort of regressive moral standard are you holding to?
Exactly.
That is keeping you in the dark. Yeah,
no, that's nuts. And it can be like the gaslighting nature of it can
it's
really
always been
drive.
It's been this way for 2 years, tops.
Dude,
like,
we say it always. We always want to point to that. There's plenty of examples of history.
Yeah, and those people were insane. Like, it doesn't matter how old of an example we can find.
Kidding,
those people were insane.
Yeah.
Oh man,
I loved, this is an offshoot on the topic, but Shapiro is one of the people who he chose to put on the back of his books, so I'll quote Ben.
Because he wanted the money coming.
Which makes sense. But no, Ben has a hilarious response. This is back before Ben Shapiro was like the Ben Shapiro we know today, like when he was just doing college lectures, and that's how people started to get to know him. Was he was a guy that was destroying the libs. And
do you remember, you guys ever watched the, like, you know, back during that era, kind of, you know, pre-2016, there were all the, like,
don't put Milo Yiannopoulos.
There were all the, he was probably in some of them, but there you could find all these compilations everywhere, like on YouTube, of SJW cringe and destroying SJWs and all that stuff. It was fascinating.
Really Crowder too. Yeah, Stevie Crowder. All that.
Yeah, I watched so many of those compilations.
Yep,
they were great.
Well, one of the ones that was in that list was some girl talking about transgenderism to him, and Shapiro was like, "Yeah, well, my grandpa thinks he's a toaster. It's not loving of me to tell my grandpa, oh yeah, grandpa, you are a toaster, and to treat him that way." And of course, like, she has no response because it is just like the sheer craziness of like putting it into just slightly different terms. Just go one degree further. Now you can agree it's insane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
So here's something to think about. People who believe that, though, who are okay with it, who would accept those sorts of things, they have just as much, if not more, of a voice, of a vote, of an influence on the direction of our country, state, even locally. That's something that sometimes I think about and I think, oh man, this is crazy. Like, no, you should be in charge of nothing.
Yeah. Right.
Like, you should be doing, you know, very menial work probably for most of the rest of your life, because you can't be the one in charge of anything.
Right.
If you're so confused on such a level.
Yeah. Mm. On such a basic level.
Yeah.
Right? On such a basic level of just what reality is. Right? Like, how do you expect to... Why would you trust that person to think through, like, more complex issues when they're denying just basic
biology?
Like, basic biology, basic reality of, like, this is the way the world is. Like, my 4-year-old daughter can understand that.
Well, yeah, but if you choose to show her Zootopia, she'll learn that she can be anything she wants to be.
And now I feel bad because we watched Zootopia. I wish you would have told me that before we watched it.
We will not watch it again.
You're heading in the wrong direction.
Man. But back
we made up for it. We watched the 1950s Robin Hood. King Richard going off to the crusade. And
wow.
And
then coming back as a hero.
Is it.
Now not a bad guy. Yeah.
Coming back as a hero. Exactly.
Yes.
Not
now
as
you
like
need to watch the 1920s Robin Hood.
Ooh. You're talking about
Errol
the TV
Flynn.
Show.
No, not the TV show. The movie, The Adventures of Robin Hood. It's got Errol Flynn. It's brilliant. Okay. It's so fun. My boys love it.
I like the 1950s one, so I'll probably like that one too.
Oh, it's great. It's
and
so
because
good.
It's new, we don't like the Kevin Costner Prince of Thieves, or we do like it?
I haven't seen it, actually.
I feel like it's not a good movie. I don't remember because I haven't seen it for a long time. I feel like it's not actually a good movie, but I did watch it when I was pretty young, and I thought it was really cool.
I just like Kevin Costner so much. It's probably my favorite Robin Hood. It does have the weird Morgan Freeman Muslim guy in it that's like, oh, this feels out of place. Maybe I just don't know my Robin Hood lore as well as I ought to, but that was different. And there's a freaky witch, but it's also got the guy who plays Snape. What's his name? Rickman? Alan Rickman? He's the bad guy. He's fantastic.
Great bad guy.
Yeah. Nice. It's good. Andrew, to your point, reel back in.
We're getting into the after hours.
That's right. To reel back in for a second, skipping a few pages right now, but I think it captures on page 25. We can come back, of course, previous, but on page 25, it captures, Andrew, what you were talking about he writes here about the sexual revolution specifically, but also more broadly. In short, the sexual revolution does not simply represent a growth in the routine transgression of traditional sexual codes or even a modest expansion of the boundaries of what is and isn't acceptable sexual behavior. Not at all. Rather, it is the repudiation of the very idea of such codes in their entirety. More than that, it has come in certain areas, such as homosexuality and transgenderism, to require the positive repudiation of traditional sexual mores to the point where belief in, or maintenance of, such views has come to be seen as ridiculous, even a sign of mental or moral deficiency.
Right, we see that every June, right? Well, okay, if you're not that part of that community, you at least have to be an ally.
Well,
you at least have to fly the flag.
I was going
to
say, you're part of a government organization. And military. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm out of it.
Whoa, how many things have changed? Oh, my gosh.
Wait.
Didn't you know we talked about this last
talked about
week?
It.
No.
Yes, we did.
And I was he's only listening to the part where I heard that he's nursing.
Yeah, he's nursing.
But that means that you
can't walk it. I can work it full-time and do nursing.
Crazy, I didn't know that.
Yeah. We're talking about A Strange New World. You're talking nursing. Sorry, he's nursing now.
This is A Strange New World.
No, he's going to nursing school.
I
phrased it more.
No, I'm not taking any supplements so I can lactate or anything like that. That's not the time.
That's why your kids appear to love you so much. That makes sense,
This is why I was like, hey, we gotta read this book together, buddy.
Oh, he's nursing now.
To broach this awkward topic really smoothly.
Wait, this is blowing my mind here.
I was at the DOT not too long ago, and like every June that flag is getting hoisted on the building that you're working on. It's just like, oh yeah, this is comfy.
Well, it was interesting because the enemy, when was that last year? I think there was a non-alcoholic arcade bar, like they serve non-alcoholic beers and stuff like that, that opened up downtown La Crosse, and they decided to do an all ages friendly, quote unquote, drag show for their grand opening.
Great.
Yeah. So my dad was talking to me. He's like, oh, can you come down? And people are going to be out there protesting. And I'm like, I couldn't make it that day, but I wrote a letter to the editor that got published in the paper, just being like, this is, I wasn't just being rude or anything, but I was just saying what are we doing as a society? Is this a good thing? And I would suggest it's not, right? I wasn't calling anybody out by name or anything. You'd only get so many words, so it wasn't very long. But a couple months after that, working for the sheriff's office, I got called in by the sheriff. And he's like, hey, just so you know, again, I don't think you did anything wrong personally or said anything offensive. But there's people that work within the county that are, part of the LGBT community, and they're worried that, you're not going to treat them with the same respect. I'm like,
well, how dare you not allow drag queens to talk to children?
I sat there, and I'm like, sir, you know me. You know my reputation, right? You never had a problem with me treating anyone disrespectfully. But we work with people that we disagree with what they do every day.
Yep.
That's our job.
That's literally what you do.
That's literally what we do for our job. I'm going to treat them with respect as human beings, right? As image bearers of God. But I don't agree with them. And I'm not going to stop writing. I'm not going to suddenly start agreeing with them or anything like that. So it went well. He took it well. Yeah. He kind of just had to do his part, to try to save his, check the box and, do his political... his politicizing for the day, but it was funny to me. Yeah.
Just think about it.
You know what I'm saying? Where it's
just how many man hours are wasted in all of that just trash. What a and not, obviously there's the element that it's also destroying people's souls and corrupting children and like all those things, but man, what a mess. What an absolute mess. So let's back up a little bit. You just touched a little bit more on what he says about the sexual revolution, but let's go through each one of these primary things, because he does kind of then work through these the rest of the book. He will work these out in more detail, but he wants to at least address them up front so that you have some idea of what he's talking about. So again, the three different items that relate to the self and how we understand the self is expressive individualism, the sexual revolution, and the social imaginary. And so he, you know, he starts in talking about what it, you know, what it means to be the self. He says this on the kind of just before the heading on expressive individualism on page 22. He says the modern self assumes the authority of inner feelings and sees authenticity as defined by the ability to give social expression to the same. The modern self also assumes that society at large will recognize and affirm this behavior. So the idea that, you know, one's internal feelings dictate what you are, like, period. Like, that's kind of the, you know, the center of how you understand yourself, who you understand yourself to be, what you're called to, right? What everything, right? Everything about you is dictated by seeking to live out authentically
authenticity,
what you feel inside. Which, man, that'll get you in a mess, which obviously we see, but like your internal feelings are crazy. Like, if you just don't sleep right one night, your internal feelings are a mess.
You eat a bad piece of pizza. You're an internal. You know what I mean? Like, it really doesn't take much to throw off.
You're pretty fragile bodies. Pretty fragile bodies and minds.
Exactly. It doesn't take much to throw off your inner self, right? Your inner feelings.
And you can trust that compass, though. It's, you can definitely,
it never points north, but you can trust it, right?
That's right. No, if you just add in then just sin and sinful desires and everything that is a part of us in our fallen condition, it, like, there are plenty of things that you desire or want or feel very deeply that are morally wrong and self-destructive, you know, like, morally wrong and going to, like, do damage and harm you, and that's an obvious truth. That's an obvious truth to anybody who is willing to actually look and see it. That's, you know, it's why you don't just let children do whatever they want. It's why if you love your kids, you don't, like, you discipline them and teach them, hey, you don't stick your finger in the light socket. But it's fun. But it feels good. But it, like, oh, this is, like, I really
it's
want
them
to.
Being authentic. It's
right.
The
you don't understand.
Deepest
I really
deepest desire
to.
Is to put their finger in the outlet.
Dude, kid, when you have little kids, every time you open the oven, they try to jump in it. Like, they just, like, kids always. You're opening the oven, and they, like, run over there.
Anytime there's something remotely dangerous, they're just like, run to
right,
it.
Run to
but
it.
But then I remember when I was a kid, I did the same thing.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like, wow. Like, wow, this is hard. But, like, you have to, like you said, like, you have to stop those desires, or else you're going to get seriously hurt.
Yeah.
And it's because you love them, you want to stop them from doing that. But it's just funny to me, like, right here it says in that paragraph you read, the modern self also assumes that society at large will recognize and affirm this behavior. So not only is my are my inner feelings, like, the truth about me and who I am, society also has to affirm my inner feelings.
Right.
Which, what if someone's inner feelings then conflict with your inner feelings? And it's just like, so why do they have to... So at some point, it's like someone's feelings are bowing to someone else's feelings. So who gets to decide? That's the problem. That's what we have now. It's just this... That's what I think why we have so much violence and chaos is because people assume this, right? That people have to affirm who they are and the feelings and the attitudes that they have. Well, yet everyone else is trying to do the same thing and then they're butting heads.
And the only way to, like, the only way to actually fully express yourself then means you have to eliminate everybody else in one way or another, right? And so you have to become a totalitarian of self, where you have to destroy everybody else. Everybody else has to be subservient to you. But like you're saying, when that is, when everybody is in the position where they're trying to do that, what that leads to is massive clashes of violence. Like that's where it's going to end. If it's not put in some kind of check, right? And that's where it goes in the end, is it becomes incredibly violent and destructive. So he goes into expressive individualism. He quotes Robert Bella and says he defines this expressive individualism this way. Expressive individualism holds that each person has a unique core of feeling and intuition that should unfold or be expressed if individuality is to be realized. And then when he also quotes from Charles Taylor, and so much of what Carl Truman does is incredibly influenced by Charles Taylor. Charles Taylor is, probably one of the more profound thinkers about the social condition that we're currently in. And he's the kind of guy that was writing about it way before everybody else, right? Like one of those guys that saw a lot of these trends. He then quotes Charles Taylor as saying, the culture of authenticity is one where each one of us has his or her own way of realizing our humanity, and that it is important to find and live out one's own as against surrendering to conformity with a model imposed on us from outside by society or the previous generation or religious or political authority. So it has to come, to be authentic, it has to come completely from you, completely removed from anything outside of you. I was just talking to some folks recently in some premarital counseling just about self-centeredness and selfishness and where that leads and where it gets you. But if you've ever known an incredibly self-centered person, which is most people today, right? Like it's like because we are in a culture of self and of expressive individualism, most people are intensely self-centered in a way that is not historically normal, because it used to be you couldn't be self-centered because you would die. Like you would just, like you have to depend upon others and work with others just to get food, just to survive. And so not that you couldn't be selfish, but you couldn't, have selfishness, but you can't have the same kind of radical self-centeredness that you can have today, which is just propped up by our incredible wealth and the fact that you're not dependent upon anybody else for anything that you need except for these multinational corporations that love if you're an insane person that is completely dependent upon them, right? Like that is completely disconnected from everybody else, because then you're going to be the ultimate consumer. Both, and so, you know, there's obviously forces that desire that and want that, whether it be large corporations or the government itself, or the medical industry, right? There's all these people that profit and benefit from you being a completely isolated individual trying to fulfill all of your selfish desires. But self-centeredness, if you've ever known somebody who's incredibly self-centered, where, you know, you try to talk to them and every conversation has to come back to them, everything has to be about them, they're constantly looking, and it's exhausting because it feels like a black hole that you're speaking into, that you're talking with, right? Like it's the kind of thing that just keeps sucking everything into it. But what's interesting about that kind of person is they could have everybody around them who truly loves them, truly cares about them, who's taking care of them even, and they will never feel it. They will never feel that they're receiving love. They will never feel that way because they're so self-centered. It doesn't mean they're not. Because you, as a person, are made to be focused upward, most importantly, right? Relationship toward God, and outward, relationship toward your neighbor, right? Love God, love neighbor. That's what you're made for. That's the duty God made you for. What's required of you. And if you don't have that, you don't have anything, actually. Like you start to lose yourself too. And we talked about this last week, but this idea that to be authentic, You have to just live out everything based on every impulse, whatever it is. Like that actually leads to losing everything, like to losing yourself, to having nothing in the end, and all those things you desire falling apart.
Yeah, and I think it's no coincidence that the rise in that attitude, that thinking, has given rise to the mental health crisis, the rise in suicide rates and all that stuff. Because again, it's like all this stuff's connecting, connecting the dots. But
how dare you suggest that? Yeah, that's so terrible.
Because again, when you're just so focused inwardly, you're never going to be satisfied. You're never going to be happy. Right, because like you said, you're never going to receive the love and affection of people who actually are truly loving you and caring about you. You're never going to receive that because you're just so inwardly focused, and you're constantly in introspection because it's always about me. I'm never thinking about, again, like you said, one, the God who created me. You're not thinking about Him and what He what He commands me to do, what He's called me to be, and then you're not thinking about the fact that God has called you also to look outwardly to your fellow man and to look out for their interest and not your own. So you're kind of just in this like constant state of like morbid introspection. Mm. And of course people would be going insane. Like if you constantly just like sat there and thought about yourself all the time and like, I'm not getting enough, all I want, like I'm not happy with who I am. Right. And then I think that plays into church.
And there's people's too, fault, right? Because if I'm authentic, then they're
yes, I'm being authentic to myself. Everyone else is,
culture.
Yeah, everyone else. Yeah. I always think that's funny when people are like, well, it's people aren't, like, individuals aren't the issue. It's society. It's like, well, society's made up of individuals. So, like,
Scott's got a quote where Michael's like, well, if it is my fault, then it's because society made me this way. It's never my fault. It exactly. Only ever be the people around me.
Yeah, right. It's just always taking the blame off yourself. Yeah, it is interesting. But again, I think then also it all plays into the transgenderism, right? That, hey, I don't like myself. I don't like this about myself. I can just change it. Yeah. All of this can just be fluid. Like, right? I'm in charge of my own self and, my reality, and I can just change it if I don't like it. Right? And if I don't like that change, I can just change it again. So,
yeah. Yeah, I had this realization the other day. I was talking to my wife, and I just realized, man, most people have never had a conversation with somebody else where they actually listen to that person and they hear that person and they know that person, as opposed to simply like hearing everything through the lens of how it affects them or how it, like, again, kind of turned inward. You don't actually listen to anybody, you just hear things about yourself and what they're saying. Or you're constantly, it's like when you're an adolescent, think about when you were maybe in like middle school or something like that. You thought about yourself all the time and what you looked like and how you sounded and what other people thought about you. And you thought everybody was thinking about you, and nobody was.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like nobody thought about you. Yeah. Nobody like remembers the stupid things you did. Nobody, because nobody was thinking about you. They were all thinking about themselves too.
The same thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They're all turned inward. The ideal is that you grow out of that, right? Like ideally you wouldn't even, I think that if you grow up in a fairly stable home, and especially if you're not thrown into an education system that emphasizes peer pressure, basically, as like social conformity. But like, if you have, if you have influence upon you that are mature and godly, I think that probably in that situation, you still have that, but much less. It's easier to kind of look outward and follow when it's not like, hey, everybody that I know and am close to in any way is as immature as me and as self-centered as me. So I don't think it has to be as extreme. Like, we've created a situation where it's an extreme. But you still will always have that. But you're made to grow out of it. Like, that, it's not made to be the way that you live the rest of your life is like middle school. But that's what it's become, right? Like, that's what it's become. Right? But worse.
Yeah.
Like, so much worse. Yeah. So in this scenario, your minimum
Yeah, the goal is, right, to grow in sanctification, to grow in holiness. And then, you know, by the grace of God, you do grow out of that. But unfortunately, again, like you said, there's too many people that haven't grown out of it. And I think that's where we're getting, you know, again, people are just so obsessed with themselves. And again, now it's just coming out, and we see just people butting heads because it's like, I'm looking out for myself. And then, so, okay, well, how do we live together in a society where everyone's doing that? Just it doesn't work.
So Truman argues, he says, this expressive individualism provides a backdrop, a broad backdrop at least, to aspects of what is commonly called the sexual revolution. And he begins that little subsection talking about the 60s, and that's usually what people think of when they think of the sexual revolution. But he clarifies a little more. We read close to this piece earlier, but it says on 24 going into 25, yet it would be a mistake to see the sexual revolution merely in terms of a loosening of moral boundaries to include more forms of sexual expression. What marks the modern sexual revolution as distinctive is the way that it has normalized sexual phenomena such as homosexuality or promiscuity, and even come to celebrate them. That's what he writes, is how we ought to be viewing sexual revolution today.
Yeah. Right, the removal of, like, not that sexual sin and these things has never existed.
Ever. Right.
Yeah.
No, it's existed. But that the social stigma that is associated with them has been removed.
Yep. In fact, not only removed, but like completely reversed.
Yes.
Like,
yeah. Right.
Like it's going 60 miles an hour to the east. Yeah. It didn't just stop. It is now doing 120 to the west.
It's like in those like action movies where like the person's like going forward and then they like, you know, they drift and then they're like going in reverse, you know?
This is one of the 10 Fast and Furious movies.
Of course. And then
In Fast and Furious. Yeah, Fast and Furious 2.
That's what
and
I wanted
Fast
to say.
Keep going.
And that's what I really wanted to segue into, guys, was that, you know, talking about the Fast series.
I watched this.
We're family.
There it is. I watched the 6th one in theaters, and then we went and watched the 10th one in theaters this summer. Oh, my goodness. It's so terrible.
It's bad movies.
I don't think I've watched it.
They're just bad.
Don't waste your time, dude. Don't waste your time.
That's what happens when you let, you know, expressive individualism.
There it is.
You know, you give it millions and millions of dollars.
And then just record Vin Diesel saying family from every angle.
Family. We're family.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Right.
Man.
So he then goes into, like, why exactly this happens, or what causes it to happen, why, you know, and so this is on page 26, he starts this section, why do we think the way we do? And this brings him to talk about the social imaginary, which he admits is kind of a, you know, clunky term.
Right.
But I do think it gets at something that is incredibly important, because here's the deal, like, you know, you brought up, like, Ben Shapiro earlier or guys like this. There's a lot of modern, you know, like kind of conservative types that have basically like a rationalist view of man.
Yeah.
That man is primarily a rational thinker. And so when these problems are happening, we just destroy them with facts, right? Facts don't care,
facts
about,
don't
your
care about your feelings.
And sure, in a way, right? Like there's objective truth and it doesn't matter how you feel about it. But how you feel is going to determine far more than how you think. We are primarily desiring creatures, driven by our desires and our wants and our wills, as opposed to our thinking and our like rational processes. Most people are not that rational. Even the people that think they're rational are actually not very rational.
Right.
And so we're driven by those things, right? We're attracted to things, yes, like truth, but we're driven also by beauty, by goodness, and so to understand that, you know, hey, this wasn't just, well, they won the debate, they won the argument, you know, they had more convincing arguments and that's why this happened. No, it had nothing to do with that. Sometimes arguments come later to kind of justify things, but it doesn't start there, right? It doesn't begin there. It begins with it begins with actually the social imaginary. And so this is from Charles Taylor.
Again.
Chucky. On page 27 it says, I speak of imaginary, one, because I'm talking about the way ordinary people imagine their social surroundings, and this is often not expressed in theoretical terms. It's carried in images, stories, legends, etc. Yeah. But it's also the case that, second, theory is often the possession of a small minority, whereas what is interesting in the social imaginary is that it's shared by the by large groups of people, if not the whole society, which leads to the third difference. Third, the social imaginary is that common understanding which makes possible common practices and a widely shared sense of legitimacy. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, you know, sometimes people will say, yeah, here are these, you know, here are these thinkers. And, you know, Truman's going to do that, obviously, in this book, is here are these thinkers that, like, it's their understanding of the world, their philosophies, their thinking that has guided a lot of these things. But nobody knows who they are.
Right.
Nobody's read them. Nobody's actually thought through the things that they've thought through. You just imbibe what is around you.
Right.
You think about the world in the way that you're just naturally raised in. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of a social imaginary is super helpful, I think, in understanding, yeah, this is how you get somewhere. It's not through, you know, didactic teaching, debate, you know, and actually nobody cares when it comes to those things, right? It's actually through that slow process of enculturization that happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of like the whole thing, like, you know, people are like, well, you know, why do you spend so much time on social media, like, arguing, like, you never change anyone's mind, and, like, you're right, like, you don't, and, like, sometimes maybe we should think through the wisdom of, like, getting into, like, online social media debates. Not that it has never happened, that people's minds haven't been changed, but it doesn't really work well. Because even in person, it doesn't really go, like, you rarely get somebody to change their mind and change their worldview through a purely didactic, here's the facts, like, read them and weep kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's really not how you get people to change their worldview. It's reshaping them to, like, love. Hey, you need to, like, I want to show you why you should love this. And that's kind of like, I think of
it's
like,
why memes work.
Yes, exactly.
It's why memes work. Like, memes work because you're actually more mimetic in how you see the world than you realize.
Yeah.
And so they work. They actually change you.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, reading a, you know, a
there's something about putting, like, a lion over, like, a Michael Scott picture. It's like,
hits you, like, oh, man. Right.
Yeah. But I just think of, like, you know, when Jesus is, like, kind of condemning, you know, the Jews and being like, you know, this, he's talking about how, like, he came to bear witness about the light, and they you know, they hated, the world hated him because they loved the darkness rather than the light. Not because, like, they just didn't understand. They weren't rational enough to, like, understand my arguments. No, it's, they saw Christ. They saw him do the miracles. They saw him, you know, confirm that he was the Son of God, but they hated the light and they loved the darkness.
Right. Because their deeds are wicked.
Because their deeds are wicked. They love their wicked deeds.
They love their wicked deeds,
yeah. And therefore, then they blinded themselves to the truth. And they hardened their hearts to the truth and crucified him. So.
I was not following the Lord because I wasn't picking up the cross.
But I think it's, you know, interesting here. He talks about it in 28. Right. Like, think about the sexual revolution, right? This is more than the result of a radical group of students in the 1960s discovering the work of Wilhelm Reich. The reason society thinks about sex the way it does is the result of a confluence of a host of factors, right? The pill made it cheap and easy to separate sex from procreation. You know, it made the ability to have sex more recreational. Then the advent of, you know, pornography, you know, like the rise of Playboy and Cosmopolitan, and then obviously the rise of the internet, where it's, you know, accessible 24/7 right from your hand, right? But again, these all started somewhere. I was talking with my wife the other day, and, you know, we're talking about classical education, like, what the value of it is and all that stuff. Is like, well, it really helps you to kind of be able to think, like, well about ideas. Because, right, everything we see in the world, all the good things, but also all the bad things, they all started as an idea somewhere. right? People think like, oh, if it's not actually happening, like, oh, I'm just saying, I just said it, or, oh, I just thought that, or, you know, I didn't actually do it, you know, but it's like, but you had the idea, or you're promoting that idea. And that always will, in turn, if, as long as it gets a big enough following, it will turn into action, right? But yeah, I think that's one of the cool things about Carl Truman's book here is he really is tracing, like, you know, again, not a lot of people are reading like Nietzsche and Freud and Rousseau, but like tracking, like, where did these, the things we see today, how did they come to be? Like, you know, where were these ideas birthed?
Right.
You know, why did they take such
hold in their culture? Yeah.
Pray in vain,
you He concludes his section on the social imaginary saying, in short, it, being social imaginary, helps, it deals with us as we are, and not simply as beings constituted by a set of disembodied ideas. We don't so much think about the world as we intuitively relate to it.
Yeah.
Which again goes against that rationalizing, argumentative idea.
And now rationality, right? And rationality is a part of us, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's a part of us, and some people are more like, you know, maybe weighted that way than others, and yeah. because they desire to be rational, as right. opposed to like they just are rational. No, they yeah. just they want to be the rational person. And so it's not that it's not a part of what we want to do, but it's not everything, right? It's not the only thing, and in fact, it's actually not the most important thing when it comes to how we are shaped the way that we are.
Oh, I agree.
You know, somebody could grow up in a home where their mom and dad just love each other. And they're just, you know, they're in a very stable environment in their home, and never talk about it, like never talk about the reasons for it and why, like yeah. you know, never again didactically kind of lay out, well, this is why rationally this works and right. is helpful for me.
Right.
But they just love it. Like, mm-hmm. they just, because they're just brought up in a way that how they're supposed to be.
You're right? very much describing my experience. This, and, like, I wasn't able to put it in words for a long time, but, like, the idea of growing up with two parents who clearly loved each other. Like, I can still remember at a young age thinking, well, who wouldn't want this? Like, seeing my family and growing up the way that we did, it was just very sweet. And, again, to your, like, I wasn't able to articulate
right.
by, like, premise, conclusion why that was the case. Yeah. It was just so instinctively obvious.
It's instinctive yeah. because it's part of the social imaginary that you're brought up into, mm-hmm. you know. Now, the social imaginary is greater and bigger than just our families, right? Especially with the advent of modern entertainment, TV, movies, now with the internet. There's, like, there's a lot more that influences us. But those relationships in the home are probably still central, mm-hmm. like they're still primary. But there's a lot of these other things that will, especially if they're allowed to be, you know, allowed to be a normal
right.
influence. And he says this in his conclusion. One of the things he says that I think is important is he says, and the fact that the reasons for this are so deeply embedded mm-hmm. in all aspects of our culture means that we all are to some extent complicit mm-hmm. in what we see happening around us. To put it bluntly, we all share more or less the same social imaginary.
Right.
And I think this is important to remember that you're actually just as much a part of this as anyone else. Mm-hmm. Now, it's true that in Christ, especially if we're given the mind of Christ, if we're guided by the Holy Spirit, yeah, like there's ways in which like we're not in the same way maybe influenced by the culture, ways that God has, you know, called us out of it. At the same time, you can't escape it. You can't get out of it.
Yeah.
You're probably way more like...
You already know.
There was a great bit that speaking of, you know, destroying the SJW era of of modern conservative politics goes. There was a great bit by Gavin McGinnis, if you know who that is at all. He was kind of big in the era. I don't know what he's doing now, but he was big in the, he helped found Vice News and then became, I don't know if he was really conservative, but became kind of like an influencer like those guys, like a Steven Crowder, like a, you know, like some of the guys on the Daily Wire. Like he just became kind of an influencer in those circles. And I think maybe a little bit more extreme in some ways than than some of them. But he was also just really funny. And he had this whole bit once that I saw. This is, I mean, I don't know how many years ago. This is probably pre-Trump. But he had this bit about basically why, like, baby boomers were the worst generation. And it was so funny. I should find it sometime and send it to you because it was so funny. He even, like, goes at one point. He's just, it's just like a rant, you know. And he's just like, you know, one of the ways, like how they hold their silverware. He's like, the way they, like, they don't know how to hold silverware. And, like, it's so funny. Like they just grab it like animals. And, like, it's just so funny. But one of the things he says at one point is he's like one of the problems with baby boomers is they started to, like, talk about the self. And how they feel, and everything's about how they feel. And honestly, a lot of it, you know, a lot connected to what we're talking about here. But he's like, if you would have gone to, like, you know, my great grandfather, and, you know, I just imagine, like, you know, he's coming home from work, and you're like, hey, how do you feel? And he'd be like, what do you mean? Like, I go to work. I gotta support my family. What do you mean how I feel? like it's just not a thing. And that's only a partial truth, right? He was being hyperbolic. But it's so funny. And it was so true. Like, no, actually, there have been times, many times, maybe even most of human history where, yeah, how you feel is not so determinative of everything. But even in our circles, how you feel internally is what drives you. It's what determines everything. It's what determines what a good church is. Mm-hmm. It's what determines who God is and what God's like and what
how he's to be worshipped.
How's he to be worshipped? Like,
it as long as your heart is in the right place, you worship how God wants.
God knows my heart.
God knows my heart. And the Bible doesn't contradict that.
God knows my heart.
And my heart is good.
I know. Aren't you scared? Freaking out.
No, my heart is good. I'm just being authentic to myself. Gosh.
Oh boy.
Big whoa.
Too funny.
No, we were talking to...
Just kind of finite.
Yeah. Well, we were talking to... one of the elders at church on Sunday, just about, like, his I don't think it was Jim.
I feel like there's always another name, Jim, at PCA Church, so I figured it was a safe. Is it Jim?
It's a good. But we were talking to him about, like, you know, him and his reasoning for, because he's one of the founding members of the church and all that stuff. And he was just like, yeah, we just felt like the worship wasn't God centered where we were. And it's like, we have to remember that, you know, worship isn't for us, right? What does God require of worship? And like, I'm like, that's a great answer. Like, that's a
machine.
Yeah. Definitely that. Yep.
I mean, probably because of the social imaginary that all of us are raised in, if you walk into a church and you love every element of the worship, there's probably something wrong. If in other words, if you don't have to grow to love it, not that you just hate every part of it, but like if there's not some bit of like, this is distant from me and I have to grow and work toward loving this, then probably you're not in the right place. Unless you think that our current cultural moment is a superior way to judge the worship of the church. Which most of us would agree, not at all.
Right.
You know? Like, you should probably walk into a church, especially if you're new to it, and be like, this is weird. But there's something about it I want, you know, like, there should be, I mean, hopefully there's some desire, but like, there's, you know, it actually probably should be a little harder for you because yourself has to change. You have to conform to something else and learn to love something else. And that's actually part of maturing and growing in Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be the pinnacle. We've got Hillsong, Elevation, Bethel right now. So.
Could be the pinnacle.
The best, most faithful, integrity laden.
This could be the peak of
true. Now revival's really happening.
That's right.
It's always, this generation. This generation. It's really happening.
It really is this time.
And if you just keep saying it enough, that it is. Right. That it is.
I saw it on social media. There was a church where it was happening for a week straight. So guaranteed that was it.
That was it, yeah.
Too funny.
And it's definitely not people proving that they're having a revival. It's, it couldn't possibly be that.
Yeah. But that's an interesting thing maybe to end on. Like, how much of this social imaginary, this expressive individualism has infiltrated the church, right? Like, we, you know, I think over the past couple of years, my viewpoint on some things, in a good way, right? You know, that progression towards, you know, being more like Christ has changed. And realizing maybe the way I grew up and how things were done growing up.
Yeah, because all the artists walk.
You know, kind of lost my train of thought.
No, you're good.
I'm going with it. But you see what I'm saying? Like, that, like, realizing, like, how much of this expressive individualism, this idea, this modern idea of self, has infiltrated the church, and then how, therefore, we worship. We conduct our worship. You know, like what is something? Have you noticed that too, as you grow up, and like, as you've grown up in the church, and as you, like, you've sought to become more like Christ and grow in holiness? Like, is that something you kind of come to the realization of, like, oh man, a lot of this has infiltrated the church, and like, what do we do about it? Right? Like, how do we recognize that and then change, like, make moves to change that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have the solution, the answer. Maybe, yeah. But yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
Something to chew on, something to think about, something to chew on. And like, again, like, you know, I ask that because we talk about these ideas, and I don't want them to be like, oh, those people out there.
Lofty,
those people out
theoretical.
There. Yeah. Like, always just like those people out there, but also asking the question for ourselves and like, yeah, like, oh, expressive individualism. That's, you know, like the way the modern world has, you know, taken off with that idea, taken off with the idea of self. It's just ridiculous, but not recognize it in our own lives, right? Not recognize it in our own spheres, like in our own places of worship, in our own homes, of like, how is that? Because we're influenced by it. Like Michael was talking about, this is the water we swim in,
right?
Whether we like it or not, it's the, you know, it's the pool we've been thrown into. You know, we can't really get out of it, right?
Right.
So how do we recognize that and then therefore seek to kind of change the direction?
Yeah.
Yep. No, for sure. I think it's probably a good sign that you can, like, articulate those changes too. That reminds me, I can't remember who said it, but there's a great quote out there that talks about, like, the man who can't remember the last time he changed his mind is either a god or has mistaken himself for one.
that's a good point.
That is fantastic. Right,
that's a good point. Yeah.
And especially, like you're describing, if you're the fish in the water who, regardless of whether or not he knows he's wet, is constantly wet.
Yes.
Well, then, yeah, it's probably worth starting to, like, discern that.
Yeah, exactly.
Start dissecting it.
Yeah, I was just asking, like, Chase, about, like, how do we... You know, it's, we recognize, like, the world and, like, these ideas and how they're shaping the world around us. But how do we look internally and recognize that, like you talked about, we're part of this social imaginary, whether we like it or not. It's the water we're swimming in, whether we like it or not. And, like, how do we recognize, like, where it's influenced us in our homes, in our, you know, churches? And how do we, like, what are some ways we can, you know, seek to move away from that? Like, recognize, hey, these worldly ideas, this modern idea of self, and, you know, this modern idea of expressive individualism, and, like, even, you know, sex have been influencing the church. How do we, you know, start to break away from that? Is something, I don't know if we're not probably not going to answer here now, but just something to chew on, I think, as we read through this book.
Yeah, and you know, like we said last time, Truman is really just trying to diagnose these things. He doesn't do a lot as far as application, and so it would be good for us to be thinking about, what are some of the ways that you can move forward? Honestly, like what I just said, I think is one thing to consider, if what Truman says is true, and I think most people listening to this, most of us, like our circles, we would agree something's really wrong, culturally speaking, even in the church. We know, hey, things aren't quite what we think they should be. But almost everybody still assumes, well, then, like, I need to go find something else, like how to understand God, or what, you know, what kind of theology to follow, or what worship should be like. And when I find it, I will know, right? It will really fit to me when I find what's right. Mm-hmm. Actually, you're probably wrong.
Yeah.
And probably you will feel out of place if you find true worship. mm-hmm. Something that's God-centered as opposed to self-centered,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you will feel out of place because you are self-centered. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you won't
yeah.
have some desire for it, right? Especially if the Holy Spirit is at work within you. Like, there's going to be some pull.
Yeah.
And over time, you will grow to not be self-centered.
Yeah.
Especially when you have God-centered worship at the heart of everything that you yeah. do. It's going to, over time, make you God-centered.
Yeah.
And that will change things. And it might change things in ways that you don't expect at all. You know, it may be different. It affects us, you know, as believers when we think about, you know, evangelism. What does it look like to evangelize, to reach people? It is not doing everything we can to make God acceptable to the self.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. And that's how most evangelism is carried out. It's how most church services are constructed. What will make the most amount of people feel comfortable, at home, welcomed?
Because that's like the mortal sin, though, right? Is yeah. that we would make, if an unbeliever or, you know, an outsider walked into our church service,
if they were uncomfortable,
if they were
could
uncomfortable,
you
that is like the mortal right. sin, right?
Because
like,
they should be able to set the standard. They yeah. know what's best
because
for them.
We, yeah, because we've right. been so influenced, like, oh, so many people walked away from the church because it's not for them. So we got to, like, if they, you know, if they come in, like,
mold
gotta,
it to that,
you know, we
yeah.
got to, like, yep. just come around them and insulate right. them from, like, any, like, you know, mm-hmm. anything that would,
everything's
like,
good here.
You know, disturb
fine.
Them,
yep.
you know,
right.
in their self. You know, it's like, and, like, yeah, it's...
No,
that's the
actually,
problem is they need to be disturbed.
That is the problem. Right.
What healthy ecclesiology doesn't come from, yeah, trying to morph
yeah.
to
yeah.
The desires of society and self-centered
yeah.
yeah.
sinful person.
I don't understand.
So, you would say, you know, if you are feeling a disturbance, you know, and you're desiring to search out, you know, for a more biblical, you know, God-honoring worship, and then you do find it, and you're... like you know you're not comfortable, like, discipline yourself to, like, go through the growing pains.
Yeah. And it's yeah. hard, like, it's hard because you also could be in a situation where you're uncomfortable because it is uncomfortable and it's not, and it's like
yes.
a weird situation.
Yeah, you have
right?
to discern
so
that
right.
There's things that are like
there's
you're uncomfortable because it is actually
yeah.
weird and messed
yeah.
up.
There's a discernment element
yeah.
but just to understand, just like, you know, hey, when you're working out and trying to get in shape.
Yeah.
It's not like, man, this is all comfortable and natural.
Mm-hmm.
You might even like it. Like, there mm-hmm. might, there's elements of it that you like, but your body's going to
yeah.
be sore. You're
right.
going to be tired.
Yeah.
You're going to have to push yourself. It's not going to be easy.
You're going to be required to take discipline to do it again
yeah.
tomorrow.
Yeah. And that's the same with everything, right?
Yeah.
Everything is like that.
Yeah.
And especially
yeah.
knowing God, worshiping
yes.
God, of course that's going to take
yeah.
effort.
Is this, yeah. As a sinner gets closer to a holy God, you're going to be uncomfortable. But there's a phrase they used to say in the military, like, you know, when you're doing hard stuff, they always said, embrace the suck.
Yeah.
right? Like, you just embrace the suck. Like, uh-huh. you're chest deep in swamp water. You're like, you're exhausted. You're hungry. You're thirsty. Embrace the suck. Like,
yeah.
you know, you're like mile 10 in on your ruck. March, like,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, everything's going numb. Like, embrace the suck. And, like, you just drive through it, and in the same way, right? Like, if you're gonna get closer,
mm-hmm.
if you're gonna grow in holiness as a sinful man, like, it's gonna be uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like, it's
the yeah. you know, the
Jocko
kind of motivational
yeah, yeah.
motivational talk. The good,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
good,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Everything's falling
happened.
Apart.
Yeah,
good. Everything.
Yeah.
Good.
There's like one of the, one of my classmates texted me the other week, and he's like. Dude, there's a crap ton of like meds on this next test or whatever, and I just sent him a meme of like Kevin from The Office going like, "Yes,
yeah,"
and we're like, "That's what I'm talking about.
We're gonna do it."
yeah. It's like, so that's just like the attitude you have to have,
yeah.
right? Like, let's just do it, like, right, like, put your head down and do it. You know, not saying I always have that attitude,
right?
you know, like.
But. Jocko's got a couple of fantastical sound bites. One of the best ones that he's got is, have you guys heard the one on him, like, talking about yelling and, like, how it's just weak to scream? Like, don't yell at people. When's the last time that your boss yelled at you and you were like, oh, yeah, now I'm motivated
strong
and I respect
yeah.
him more? He's like, just don't, like, and, which
yeah.
obviously means a lot coming from him.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. He's got a couple good sound bites.
It was
sure.
like, yeah, again, going back to the military, there was always those instructors that, like, yelled at you. And, like, you'd be like, you know, like, oh, this sucks, but you expect it. But it was always the ones that were just, like, quiet, you're like,
Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing?
Like a little more stoic.
Yeah, a little more stoic. Like, oh, like you guys don't want to, you don't want to work hard? Okay. And they're like, and they just walk away. You're like, wait, what? wait, what are you going to do?
Kind of like the classic, there's like a meme about like how like getting flipped off when you're driving sucks, but it's even worse if somebody like gives you a thumbs down signal. Like, somehow that feels worse internally.
That's so...
Dang
wait,
it.
What?
Somebody flips you the bird. You're like, whatever.
Yeah, you get all
like,
defensive.
Oh, they're just, they've got problems. Yeah. And somebody's like...
thumbs down, frown face.
Or somebody just like looks at you like...
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Like disappointed, shaking
the condescending superiority of that.
Yeah.
So good.
Disappointed, shaking to the head.
No, I'm glad that you're here to talk about embracing the suck, because if I say it, I feel hypocritical, because like, I haven't rocked 20 miles.
That's right.
But it's
that's
good. Right. It's way easier for me to say, oh, yeah, get comfortable being uncomfortable. It's a lot harder to actually do it. So
yeah, really push it on the pickleball court.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I say. Like, well,
you're
at
the pickleball court. Yeah, you're hours.
I sprained my hammy, but I had to play through.
You're hour 16 in the pickleball.
That's right. Well, actually, I don't. Donk the dink instead of dinking a donk. You know, that's going to get all up in your grill. So.
He gets it. Chase gets
it.
Dude,
I love pickleball. Any pickleball PPA guys out there who want to sponsor me, let me know. I can send you my highlight reel. I would love to do that.
He just starts getting blown up.
Amateur podcaster Chase Vitor now entering the PPA tournament. About to get murdered. All of his opponents have promised to play it with their non-dominant hand to make it somewhat closer.
Oh, man.
Too funny.
Man.
So you just gotta brace the suck, man.
Embrace the suck. Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Oh, good chapter. Looking forward to that.
Next week is Romantic Roots. Chapter 2. Romantic
Romance, eh?
Roots.